Good morning. My name is Greg Frank. I'm the hearings officer hearing the case for us this morning, which is case number 212005. I'm going to ask for the record, starting on the city side, for first name, last name. Spell your last name slow enough that we can write it down and give us your mailing address, please.
Okay. Stephen Cass, S-T-E-V-E-N, last name spelled K-A-S-S. Mailing address is 1900 Southwest 4th Avenue, Suite 5000, Portland, Oregon, 97201.
Sir, if you'll identify yourself for the record, please.
Yes, John Patchett, P-A-T-C-H-E-T-T. Mailing address 8415 Southwest Seneca, S-E-N-E-C-A. That's in Tualatin, Oregon, 97062.
Is that southeast or southwest?
Southwest.
Got it. Okay. Did we get the zip code? Okay. All righty. Before we get started, is there any preliminary comments that you want to make? And I'm going to run through all my opening comments in just a sec. Is there anything preliminarily you want me to be aware of? I noticed you guys had some discussions because my clerk came and said you wanted to have some discussions. Do we need to go through the hearing? Do we need to present the information? Anything that I should be aware of?
Well, I think Mr. Patchett and I have been working a little bit on this case. He brought up the issue of the fact that the landlord has been involved in a Multnomah County landlord-tenant proceeding in which the tenants are supposed to be out on the 17th. Mr. Patchett's not aware of whether that's the 17th this month or next month. So we don't really have a date certain for that. What I told Mr. Patchett is I'm interested at this point in making sure this property gets vacated. And so I'll let him make any arguments that he wants to make about why the city should either not vacate or not be reimbursed for the cost of vacation, which I think is the main concern at this point. We didn't actually discuss violations.
Okay. Mr. Patchett?
Yes. To the best of my knowledge, it was agreed in court last week that the tenants would be out on the 17th of this month, and that the company wouldn't chase any back rents for the last 7 months or anything. It's just everybody did a wash and walk away. Now, I don't know that for a fact, but if that is the way it's going down, I don't think there should be any involvement in relocation of the tenants, because they have been compensated for the last 7 months.
All right. We'll proceed with the hearing then as scheduled. I will make a couple comments preliminarily about the landlord-tenant issue, just to keep in mind during any testimony that you might have. Not having the documents from the county court regarding the landlord-tenant action in front of me, these are all meant sort of generic comments rather than relating specifically to this case, because I don't know the facts of this case. So let me explain how I view vacation and what I have the authority to do and what I will consider, so long as violations in fact are proven, that constitute fire, life, and safety violations. Okay, so there's a lot of ifs and maybes in that sentence. If the violations occurred, are there, and if they are fire, life, and safety violations. So let's just put those aside and say, if they are, then my authority under the Portland City Code is to order vacation. As a practical matter, let me tell you how that works. As a practical matter, what that means is that I issue an order. That order is uh, hasn't become effective for 14 days, so there's a 14-day, I'm starting to add up windows. There's a 14-day window, really until that 14-day window runs, the city will not, at least under my direction, will not start the vacation process. In other words, they will not go to the court and say, give me an administrative search warrant or do whatever else is necessary in order to get the tenants out. So in a normal course of occurrences, it would be approximately 30 days or more, but approximately 30 days from the date that I signed my order saying there are violations, there are fires, life and safety, and thou shalt vacate it. The city will not participate in the vacation process or initiate, from Mr. Cass's perspective, the process for roughly 30 days, okay, from the date of my order. So if, in fact, you have a 17th of March vacation and the tenants, in fact, vacate by the 17th, then my order to vacate is much ado about nothing, except perhaps as relates to the board up or the security of the property. Okay, and I'm usually not asked to impose any additional civil penalties just for the board up section, a portion of it. But if that's the case, we'll talk about it in here. So from a vacation perspective, I can order vacation. It probably won't become something that's done in the field at the house for about 30 days. If I order a vacation, in almost every instance, I can't remember one that I didn't, I will order that the tenants be relocated at the landlord's or the owner's cost, okay? That ultimately constitutes a lien on the property. So I have the authority to do that. Can't imagine not doing that, but that process takes a while and is even outside the Bureau of Development Services. From what I understand, there's an additional bureau or agency or group that does those relocations. So it takes a while. So that's kind of the logistical process of how the city does things if I in fact order. I have every right to do that if in fact order vacation if there are fire, life, and safety issues that I believe constitute a risk to those tenants. Okay, so I have a right to do that, and that's the time frame. Any questions about just general or comments regarding the general process? Ms. Cass? Okay. So basically, what I would propose to do is we proceed with the case. You can request your vacation. If Mr. Patchett, you're correct that they're supposed to be out of there on the 17th, and they are out of there on the 17th, based on the court's order, then shouldn't have any problem. Even if they're not out of there, if your owner, the landlord, acts expeditiously, they can get have an order of restitution, or now I always forget what the name of the order is. Anyway, there's an order that somebody will actually go out and move them out physically.
The sheriff's office will do
that. And so, and that usually is something that happens within a week.
Yeah.
Within a week.
10 days, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, Even if my time frame is correct of 30 days from my date of the order probably won't go out until Monday or Tuesday in this case if I decide it today, you'd still probably be in a court, if the court ordered the sheriff actually has to go out and do it, you still should be theoretically. What I'm concerned about is that if in fact all of those things don't occur, and in the real world, when you're sitting in my chair, lots of things are promised and lots of things don't happen. And so I never know whether or not something's going to happen. And I will tell you that my order of vacation trumps the courts. That my order of vacation doesn't have counterclaims and all this other kind of stuff involved that the tenant can do. My order simply says, get them out. The city has a right to go and they will get them out. But the cost of that is that you will be the relocation. Oftentimes, landlords actually come in to this to me and say, look, I don't want to get in a landlord-tenant fight with these people in landlord-tenant court. So you order the vacation. I don't have to deal with the tenant and all the counterclaims and crap that go along with that. I'm just telling you, if in fact I find their fire, life, and safety, I will order vacation probably go into effect in roughly 30 days.
I do have a question, actually. So regarding your jurisdiction on vacation, relocation costs, what I'm hearing is you have a right to impose those. That's within your jurisdiction. Do you have a right to determine whether the relocation fees are required if and only if the city physically goes out and does the vacation? That is, let's say the tenants move out on the 17th or the sheriff moves them out a week thereafter. We're not going to, in that instance, we're not going to have time to vacate. And then, so even if the agency came in and then offered those tenants assistance to relocate, because we hadn't done a vacation, we would not recover those costs.
No, you would not.
Okay.
So if Mr. Padgett is trying to get these folks out and does it successfully, no, there will be no relocation costs.
Understood. Thank you.
Okay, so I'm trying to, I'm looking at a backstop and saying the city can do it if you don't do it. And everything in life requires some effort or initiative. In a landlord's case, it's a lot of initiative and effort, but you actually have to follow through with the process. And we have had so many people come in and make wonderful promises, and I believe them, and then all of a sudden it doesn't get done. I'm going to make sure that we have the backstop. That's what I'm trying to explain to you, Mr. Cass, is there will be a backstop, but only in the case that if the ball goes to the backstop will, in fact, the relocation cost be imposed.
No, that's great clarification. Thank
okay.
you.
All right. Any other questions? Let me tell you the process. I'm going to ask Mr. Cass to proceed first with the city's case. He will give his testimony. Following his testimony, if you have any questions, Mr. Patchett, if you have any questions, you can ask him questions. It's much like cross-examination. That's in a real court. If we had lawyers here, we'd call it cross-examination. But in essence, what I'd like you to do is if you do ask questions, have them specifically related to the testimony of Mr. Cass and have them related in some way, shape, or form to the issues at hand. If in fact you do ask questions of Mr. Cass, then I will give him an opportunity to provide additional testimony. If he does provide additional testimony, you get to ask more questions. We do that till we're all tired. Okay? Basically, when his testimony is completed, I'll ask for your testimony. When you're done with your testimony, Mr. Cass has an equal right to ask questions. And I would ask that he does the same thing. His questions are related to your testimony and related to the issues at hand. And if he does ask you questions, you get to respond basically with any further comments or explanation or clarification. And if you do that, then it opens the door for him, and we just keep doing
that
until
we're blue in the face, I guess.
Yeah, until we're tired again. Okay. Your comment now reminds me that this is a recorded hearing, and as such, there are some very artificial social rules that occur in here. And those artificial social rules is no two people can be talking at the same time. There's only one person in the room who gets to interrupt, and I bet you can guess who that is. That's me. And my only reason that I would interrupt is to say, please, just one at a time. And I'm trying to be respectful, but please, one at a time. The recording needs to be very clear who is speaking at what time. And in normal conversation, we talk over one another all the time. It just happens. I mean, I don't know how we go through life not two of us speaking at the same time over in each other. And we seem to do just fine, but it doesn't work here. So if I interrupt you, it's not because I'm trying to be disrespectful. It's I need one person at a time. The recording will become available anywhere from 3 to 7 days. We promise it within 7 days, hopefully. But the recording of this hearing will go online within 3 to 7 days. There's some cards in the back on the table where you walked in. It has our website. If you go to our website, go to hearing recordings and then put your case number in, then you should be able to listen to this recording. Once again, it'll be a lot happier listening if only one person's talking at a time. So that's our only artificial rule. The only other thing that's probably really important in the hearing is that we've given you each an exhibit list. That's I always like a crib sheet that I can work with. You'll notice that on the very right-hand column, it's blank. That means that we have not decided what we're going to do with that particular document. We treat this very differently than in court, and that is, at this point in time, nothing that's on that list has been admitted into the evidentiary record. Nothing on that list is admitted into the evidentiary record. If you wish something to be part of the record, it's your obligation to ask. Simply say, I'd like to put into the record. I'll figure it out. Say you want it. You'll notice on the left column there's numbers. I'd prefer it that you'd refer to them by number, but I will certainly take the time to figure out what document you're talking about. If, in fact, Mr. Cass, for example, says, I want exhibits 1 through including 20 included into the record, Mr. Patchett, you have the ability to object to any one of those or all of those, and I will force you to tell me why it is that I'm not supposed to look at those. As a practical matter, any document that's relevant is admitted into the evidentiary record, then I weigh its credibility and weight in making my decision. But if it's relevant, that means it relates in some way, shape, or form to this case, it'll probably be admitted. Administrative rules, that's what we're dealing with here, are very different than the rules of evidence that would apply at the circuit court, which are somewhat strict. There's really very few privileges that are allowed here or exemptions to what's admitted. So that's the only unique part about this hearing, really, is that right now it's a blank. It's blank. Nobody's admit. I haven't admitted anything. It's up to you to say you want it in or not in. We'll see how that goes. Mr. Cass, would you do me a favor? Would you raise your right hand, please? You solemnly swear or affirm testimony about to give the truth, all truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do.
It's your opportunity to tell me why you believe that there are violations and the remedies should be awarded.
I'm a senior inspector with the Bureau of Development Services. I'm representing the city in this matter. A couple of record-keeping things before I begin my testimony. First of all, I would like to ask that exhibits 1 through 17 be admitted to the record. I also brought in an updated version of the case history, exhibit 11. I turned that into the hearing office just before I came in the room. So I would like to ask that additional exhibit, it will probably be 18, I'm not sure, be admitted.
20.
Be admitted to the record.
All right, before you go on then, yep. Mr. Patchett, do you have any objections? The 1 through and including 17 plus number 20 be admitted into the evidentiary record?
I'm fine with that.
Okay, then I will admit 1 through and including 17 and 20. I'm looking at ...18 is personal service and service by posting. And number 19 is a returned mail memo. Either of those going to be part of the record?
Yes, I would like to ask those people.
And 18 and 19. Mr. Patchett, any objection?
No, sir.
I will admit 1 through and including 20 then. Go ahead, sir.
Okay. So I've got two jobs here today. One is to prove that violations exist at the property, and the other one is to ask that the city's remedies for those violations in the situation be made hearing officer order. And my job there is to prove that those remedies are germane to fixing the problem and that they are reasonable. So the first thing I want to address is violations at the property. Actually, first thing I want to do is just a few preliminary comments about the property, just to help you understand what the property is and what its disposition is. Mr. Patchett, the exhibits go by exhibit number, but I've also paginated them at the bottom of the page. You can see a page number in brackets there. It's just handwritten. And so I'm going to refer to that page number because it's really the fastest way to find exactly what I'm looking at when I'm talking about it. So if we could go to page 3, and that's the Multnomah County assessment and taxation record. And just on the upper left there, it says that has a little heading called situs address. That says that the site is in Portland, Oregon, and as such, it's under our jurisdiction. So Bureau of Development Services has jurisdiction over the property for the purposes of citing violations of Title 29, the Property Maintenance Code, which is what this case is about. Secondly, the property is a home. It's a rental property. It is a single-story, single-family dwelling, one unit only. Currently, it is occupied, my understanding is it's occupied by two adults, three adults, one fairly elderly and ailing, and then two children on occasion. And the fact that there are two children there and an elderly person increases actually my concern about the violations I'm going to discuss. Now, in terms of violations, those violations are listed on a document called the Attachment A. And Attachment A is right here after the complaint. It's the third page in. You're too far ahead. So I would like to stipulate at this time that the city believes all of the violations listed in Attachment A, Exhibit 1A, still exist, with the exception of Violation 22. Which I believe has been remedied. So I believe there's electrical service at the property.
Let me just try to move things along here. Mr. Page, are you going to be arguing that any of the Attachment A numbers are not violations other than number 22?
I believe that they were, when this originally occurred, violations. I believe some of those have been remedied. But not all.
Do you know which ones have been corrected?
I believe that violation number 3, I believe the heat to work there properly. We were going to, I had set up with.
Okay, well, just name the numbers that, so we got
okay,
three.
I believe 6. I believe 9 was corrected. I believe 12 was correct. I believe 23, I'm sorry. I believe 26.
Any additional?
No, sir.
All right, Mr. Cass, what I'm going to do is treat Mr. Padgett's statement as a stipulation that all alleged violations do in fact occur or current and do have occurred, are presently occurring, except for number 6, 8, 9, 12, 23, and 26, which means that I would appreciate that your testimony would be relating to number 6, 8, 9, 12, 23, and 26.
As well as number three. I think you mentioned number three.
Number three, sorry.
Yeah, okay. Yep. Okay. So violation number three, with respect to what Mr. Patchett is asserting here, I'm going to stipulate that the last time I did a complete walkthrough of these violations, which I believe was on the 7th of February, I did take some corrections. This was not one of them. And the reason I'm not taking correction on it is this is an exterior furnace unit. It is not operable at the time. Mr. Patchett asserts that this is because the tenants don't have gas service, which I do believe is the case. But this is an exterior unit. It's deteriorated. It's got a broken fan on the outside, a damaged fan on the outside. And what we normally do in these situations where tenants are contesting or asserting to us that the heat doesn't work is we say, landlord, just get the gas service on long enough for us to test the heat. We haven't had an opportunity to do that in this case. So I'm perfectly willing to take correction on that if I can show that indeed this unit works. Right now there's no heat at the property. The central heat doesn't work. We also have use of portable space heaters as the heat, which are not approved under Title 29 if the main heat isn't operable. They can be used for accessory heat. So at this point, I'm not prepared to accept that violation is corrected. Violation six. Mr. Patchett is absolutely correct that there's been some electrical work done under permit at the property, and I believe all the issues have been taken care of with the exception of one, which is why I didn't take correction on the violation. Let me just find the exhibit real quick here. I don't see the photo of the exact outlet I'm looking. Oh, yes, I do. I'm sorry. Page 6, picture C, which is the middle left picture. So that's a broken outlet cover on the kitchen light switch end outlet. That was not corrected, even though many of all the other issues were corrected. So that's why I didn't take correction on that violation. We still have one small component of it that needs to be corrected. But I do want to give Mr. Patchett his due there that many of the other issues have been corrected with some rewiring under permit. The bathroom light fixtures inoperable. I'm willing to take correction on that violation.
Which number are we on now?
Violation 8. So violation 6 I don't regard as corrected. Violation 8 I will accept Mr. Patchett's stipulation that's corrected. There was no electrical power on when I did my reinspection, so I couldn't test it. But I believe, based on the other work, that it's probably corrected. The accessible window lacks hardware main table capable of maintaining it in an open position. My last inspection indicated that it did not have such hardware. Perhaps something's been done since that inspection. Violation 12, at my last inspection, there was still a fair amount of dampness in the kitchen base cabinet, indicating that there was still a leak coming from somewhere. Perhaps it was from the kitchen sink rim and not the drain itself, I'm not sure, but I still saw evidence of leakage. Violation 23, my last inspection indicated the bathroom door was still very loose on its hinges. It wasn't closing easily as a result. Just a matter of screwing those hinges in, but I didn't. My last inspection indicated that wasn't corrected.
about 26.
26. I'm sorry, I missed that one. The downspout, this downspout extension was corrected, but it's been directed at the base of the exterior forced air furnace, which I don't think is a good place to be directing the water. So I think that could easily be amended by just channeling that downspout in a different way from the forced air furnace as opposed to towards it. It has enough rust and deterioration problems without constantly being bombarded by gutter water.
Anything else on the violation?
I think what I really want to point out is that all my inspections, including the one I did when I did a return of service for the hearing date at the property, which I believe was on the 2nd of March, my findings in every inspection have been that the crawl space is still flooded with water, and that water smells of sewage. So I believe there is a sewer pipe leak in the crawl space of the property, and I believe there's some sewage that hasn't been cleaned up there, and there's ongoing pooled water under the crawl space as much as 6-8 inches deep. That's been the case ever since I started inspecting the property in October, and it's really the primary reason, along with the heat and the excessive use of space heaters, that I'm concerned about getting people out of the property. The other thing I would point out is that violation 5, I've seen evidence of rat infestation, at least on my first inspection, significant amount of rat feces. And while I can't prove it, we typically see rat infestations where we have sewer breaks. So it wouldn't be surprising to me if that sewer break was contributing to rat infestation there. At any rate, that again, along with a sewer break, is another health safety concern I have. So that's really my main issue with the violations. And again, I would stipulate that with the exception of violation 8 and violation 22, the city still maintains that at least a portion of the violations that we just discussed still exist.
If you don't mind, and I'm going to do something a little bit different, is give so that it stays coherent. Mm-hmm. Let's give Mr. Patchett an opportunity to ask questions about the violations, if you have any. If not, I'd like to establish in my own mind whether or not the violations do exist. If they do exist, are they related to fire, life, and safety issues or health and sanitation issues? That's the kind of the first step that I've got to, or hurdle that I've got to get over. So, Mr. Patch, do you have any questions of Mr. Cass regarding his testimony related to the violations?
No, I believe that maybe not 100% of some of these that I think have been addressed. Is there
okay,
a possibility?
Just any questions?
Yeah, I have no questions. No.
All right. I'll allow you to testify shortly. Mr. Cass, then go ahead and you may complete your presentation with respect to the remedies section, I would guess, is next.
So the city would like to address this situation with several remedies. And our concerns are really, or what's motivating us to action here, are several. I believe the sewage leak and the presence of raw sewage in the crawl space represents a health and sanitation violation to occupants. I think it's contributing to rat infestation there, but also just having that kind of bacteria right under the house is not a healthy thing. I think this is particularly the case in my mind because we have a sick and elderly occupant there and a couple of children there. The other thing that's motivating the city in this case is that the land, I haven't had any contact from the owner himself. I've had contact through Mr. Patchett. But my understanding from my conversations with Mr. Patchett are that the home is in financial difficulty and is either going to be subject to a some sort of emergency refinancing or foreclosure. And that gives me pause regarding how soon these violations can actually be corrected. When I spoke with Mr. Patchett on the phone, he said when we were talking about the sewer violation, he was going to go ahead and have a contractor clean it up. He came back and said, you know, the owner just doesn't have the money because of the foreclosure problems. So we're concerned that the violations are not going to be addressed in a timely way simply because of the financial exigencies for the property owner at the current time. That, in our mind, makes it, my mind makes it imperative that we vacate the occupants because I just can't rely on a timeline for repair. The fact is the case has been open since October. We're now in March of October 2011. We're now in March of the following year. That's a good amount of time, and we still don't have resolution. So I think all those things are motivating us to ask for the following remedies. We obviously, now for remedies, I'm going to be turning to the complaint. The complaint is exhibit number one. It's the second page in the packet. And I will just go in order from top to bottom. The city is asking for correction of violations in compliance with city code. We are asking for cost recovery for the city's involvement in the case. At this point, that's $292 worth of inspections and $1,215 for a cost of hearing to our bureau. However, at this time, I also listed under that other civil penalties $2,000 for aggravating circumstances. Because of the fact Mr. Patchett is here today and working through the issue, I'm going to eliminate that request. Another thing motivating the city in that regard is I believe this the landlord's inaction comes in partially in response to some difficult tenant relations and partially in response to some difficult financial exigencies. I'd rather see that money go to the repair of the building. So because Mr. Patchett is here and the landlord appears ready to move forward with trying to remedy the problem, I'm willing to drop that $2,000 request. We are asking for vacation of the property and a board up of the property to make sure that it stays secure and not occupied until the violations are corrected. The city also wants to ask for the authority to summarily abate the cleanup of the sewer break at the property if we feel that that action is necessary. Currently, I don't feel that the sewage issue there threatens the public right-of-way or adjacent properties. However, we want to be prepared in the instance that that occurred, where we had a sewage flow to the public street or that we had sewage flow to adjacent properties, that we could summarily come in and cap that sewer and clean up the sewage-related nuisance under the building. So that's something we'd only use if it became apparent that it was a public hazard that spread beyond the house or the property boundaries itself. We are asking for relocation costs in the event that we do vacate the property. And we are asking for a recovery of vacation costs. So these include one, the board up and securing of the property with a security board up, two, remove of all trash and debris from the exterior of the property, and three, additional inspections required to actually perform the vacation of the property and ensure that the board up's been done correctly. And again, any abatement of sewer-related nuisance at the property. Finally, we're asking that the hearing officer retain jurisdiction of the case for 120 days. These cases are fluid, and we'd like to come back with any requests or modifications without having to start a new hearing.
further, sir?
No.
Mr. Patch, now you have the opportunity to ask questions of Mr. Cass regarding basically what is on the complaint is paragraph number 3. This is just questions. You're going to be given an opportunity to testify shortly.
I don't think I have any questions, Your Honor.
All right. Before we get started, before I ask you to raise your right hand and all that good stuff, could you please explain to me what your relationship is and what authority you're operating under in being here on behalf of Kenneth W. Hick?
Yes, I work with Mr. Hick, and I try to work with about 3 other organizations trying to take care of violations like these that occur in the city. I work with Steve and other gentlemen downtown to make sure that we get these things corrected in a timely manner.
Do you have written authority to operate on behalf of Mr. Hick?
I do not have written authority with me, no.
And so how do you get this authority if you don't have it in writing?
Mr. Hick was detained today at OHSU, some tests, and asked me if I could come down and sit in.
I will look at you as the owner's representative with authority to be here and represent him in matters. It turns out he comes in someday and says you didn't. He could have submitted something in writing, so I'm going to deal with you as the authorized representative. And is there a unit number to your address, or did you give the same address as we have for Mr. Hick?
Yes.
Would you give your address again from start to finish?
Yes, the address was 8415 Southwest Seneca, Tualatin, Oregon, 97062.
I had number 210. Is that correct?
Number 210 is fine.
Okay. Is that correct?
Is suite 210.
Okay. All right, would you raise your right hand, please? Do you solemnly swear a firm testimony about to give us the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I did.
Tell me what you want to tell me.
I've been working with Stephen for a number of months now on this project. We had many setbacks, people not letting us in to do some of the work. We had to go through the court system to get that taken care of to where we were, in fact, authorizing it. We did start working on the violations, and I worked with Steve on that, Mr. Cass. And at the point where the biggest problem that we had was the sanitation under the house, the amount of money that I was quoted was $4,000+, and at that point, the owner said we just couldn't afford that, and they were going to make other arrangements to either let the house go back, sell it, or try to get a loan modification at that time. Since that time, we haven't done a whole lot of work on the project. I was told that there was an agreement made through the courts that the tenants would be out by the 17th of this month, is what I was told. At that point, I don't think there should be or would have to be any relocation fees. I'm not going to argue that there are some issues still need to be addressed here. I am more than willing to present that to the owner and take care of that. What I would ask, if it's possible, that if the people do in fact move out according to what's ordered on the 17th, that the first of the week, which I believe would be the 19th or 20th, I would be more than willing to meet with Mr. Cass, pay the $146 for a reinspection, and assess everything that needs to be done at that point, and start fresh. I would ask also if there's anything that the city could do to help me. The biggest problem I have is the $4,000 plus for the sanitation. The other items can be taken care of in a very timely manner, but the $4,000 is my setback right now. The money's very tight on that. People haven't, you know, the house is in trouble right now. Rents haven't been paid for 8 months. It's just been a financial disaster. But if the city is willing to work with me, I'd love to get an appointment next week and we try again. That's about all I have to say, sir.
Ms. Cass, any questions?
No, I don't have a question. I do have a clarification, but I'll wait till the appropriate time.
Okay. Since there's no additional questions, why don't you tell me that now?
I just want to clarify for Mr. Patchett that the reinspection cost recovery that I asked for in my remedy request doesn't include future inspections, with the exception of those that would be required to do a vacation. So if the property was vacant and I needed to come out and reinspect, that's not included in this hearing penalty, nor would I ask for future inspections to be included as part of the remedy. So there's no charge for those inspections.
Okay.
What I've also said to Mr. Patchett is we at least used to, in some instances, have a program to finance private sewer break repairs. I'm not sure if that still exists or what the criteria are to qualify, but I will research that.
Anything you have to ask Mr. Cass regarding his last statement, Mr. Padgett?
No, other than I appreciate anything that they can do to help us, yes.
Any final comments, Mr. Cass?
No.
Okay, by my calendar, March 17th is a Saturday. St. Patrick's Day, actually. Let me just make a proposal and see where you guys sit with this. If you don't like it, be honest and blunt with me and tell me what you think. I would propose holding off issuing my order until March 19th, which is the Monday following the 17th that's been represented by Mr. Padgett. Because if the folks are moved out, then, in fact, I'm going to suggest the 21st. That's the Wednesday, and I'll tell you why in just a sec. I will issue my order on the 21st. That's just proposing. And the reason that I'm doing that is that I would like, Mr. Cass, if you can, now to tentatively schedule a reinspection for the 19th or 20th. That's taking Mr. Patchett at his understanding and word that these folks are going to be out. Okay. He can cancel it if they're not out. And I apologize for screwing up your schedule, Mr. Cass, if in fact there is actually an appointment that you can't, you know, that isn't going to be workable. But what I'd like to know before the 21st is whether or not these folks are out. And if you've done your inspection, there's a confirmation as to what you believe to be the current status of violations. And so that would take care of that a number of those violations that Mr. Patchett said have been corrected. It also would allow enough time that Mr. Padgett, now the rock goes in your pocket. I put it pretty much in Mr. Cass's pocket so far. But what I want you to do is I want you to get together with Mr. Cass sometime either right after this hearing or soon, within the next day or two, so that Mr. Cass can review with you. And Mr. Cass, maybe you'd walk Mr. Padgett up to whoever might have information about the sewer repair assistance. But I'd like more information with respect to whether or not that's actually going to be corrected, because I perceive, whether or not you do, and this may be my little ivory tower as opposed to your real world, is I perceive pooling water in of the sewage variety in a crawl space to be perilously close to a public nuisance. That creates health and safety and sanitation issues to the public. And just because it hasn't gotten outside doesn't mean that if it continues, it won't get outside. And the problem is that some sewage has what's considered on both federal law and Oregon law is hazardous waste issues. And we're creating huge expenses potentially for the owner to walk away from, maybe, and the city to incur. So I just think it would be really helpful to know whether or not there's a realistic approach to getting the sewer problem corrected. What I'm not particularly pleased on, and it's a fact of life, is that the owner is telling Mr. Padgett that doesn't have the money to correct the problem. If there isn't a way to correct a problem economically, either through a plan or a policy or a program or some such thing, where he can finance that or do something else to get it done, then that one is going to probably create in my thinking the possibility that we look at additional civil penalties as an incentive to get this problem corrected. I may be in my ivory tower and not realistic, but having sewage, raw sewage, sitting on the ground, whether it's under a house or in a backyard or flowing into the street, all of which, although maybe in different degrees, all present a public safety issue for me, and so I'm really concerned. So what I'm going to do is look for something in writing from you, Mr. Cass, on or before the 21st. I'm not going to ask for another hearing unless one of the or both of you ask for another hearing. But so I'm putting that as an obligation for you. But if I get something in writing with an explanation of where we stand as far as the vacation by the court, where we stand as far as whether or not you've, because if they're out, you did your, and then the inspection, and thirdly is respect to how are we gonna get the sewage problem solved. Those issues are the three issues that I'm concerned with. Are the people out? Did you inspect? And that's easy. If they're not out, you probably didn't inspect, but they may actually give you permission to go into the property. I don't know. But I want to know, are they out? Did you inspect? If you did, what the results are? And third is whether or not there's a likely solution to the sewage leaking issue under the house. Those three things. Not asking for another hearing, not asking for either one of you to come back, but I want something in writing. Mr. Cass, just to anticipate questions, if they aren't out, I just want to know they're out, not out. If you don't inspect, just tell me you didn't inspect. And if there's no resolution or no better definition of what the problems are going to be with respect to correcting the sewer issue, then just tell me. It could be one very short paragraph. It may be longer if, in fact, you've gone out and done an inspection. Just attach your inspection sheet, or, you know, inspection list with it. That would be acceptable to me. Mr. Padgett, if you want anything further, you're going to have to ask for it in writing. I would expect that to be received before in our office, received in our office before the 21st, okay? So that's your obligation, is if I don't hear from you before the 21st, I'm going to assume, with all its implications, I'm going to assume that you're fine and dandy with whatever Mr. Cass sends. You're not going to get an opportunity after he submits it to respond. But if you're anticipating there's issues that you need resolved in front of me, you need to let me know that before the 21st. Any questions on process or procedure?
I have one. I'm trying to formulate it. I am concerned about the sewer abatement. Are you thinking about civil penalties in the sense of cost recovery for the city to repair the thing, or you think about civil penalties as incentive for owner to repair it. I guess if this is a property that's in foreclosure, that incentive is not likely to be effective. I'm also just a little concerned because of this, if in fact my thinking coming in was that at this point we wouldn't have to take that action. However, if your determination is that we do, I think I need to bring that to my supervisor, and perhaps we would need another hearing.
Okay. Let me tell you what my goal is here, and that is that by and large, today is the 9th?
Yes.
Today's the 9th. So, it's roughly a week and a half delay in the city's scope of things. A week and a half isn't critical in most cases unless we'd had an expedited hearing and requested expedited action. It seems to me what I'm trying to figure out is whether or not there is any likelihood that what Mr. Padgett's telling me is actually going to occur, can occur. If, in fact, let's assume everything Mr. Padgett says doesn't happen. In other words, they don't vacate, you don't inspect, and there's no program that's going to make it so it's economically viable. On the 21st, then I'm going to issue a decision finding violations at least to the extent of what we've all agreed to, and then I'll decide on the other ones. So I will find there are violations. I will find that until proven otherwise that the furnace and the sewage are both violations, and I didn't hear anything from Mr. Patch's testimony that the furnace was absolutely unequivocally working if there was gas there. All right? You're not going to even respond on that. So I'm going to find that the violations did exist. I will order cost recovery. I will order whatever civil penalties I believe are necessary in order to initiate or push things along. And because of the threatened foreclosure or the possibility of foreclosure, they may not be huge, but I will in all likelihood reinstate, from my perspective, reinstate your request for the additional punitive civil penalties. Okay, I will order vacation. I will order I will order as additional civil penalties cost recovery for all the items that you've requested. And in essence, I will give you exactly what you've asked for on that date. Okay, Mr. Padgett has a real opportunity here to solve. If he's a problem solver, and that's what he sounds like is his job. If he's a problem solver, he's gonna have those people are gonna be out. You're going to have your inspection. We'll know exactly what the violations are and how to fix them, and we will know whether or not we're going to be able to pay for the sewage. If not, then I will just go through my standard, sometimes illusory, but I will go through my standard order, and you will get everything you wanted.
Okay.
So the risk, the impetus is on Mr. Patch. More than you is you have to write something, but he has to get something done, or hopefully get it done. So, what I'm doing is just buying a week and a half, so that I have more certainty as to whether or not we're working on a pipe dream, that these people are going to get out, whether the violations do exist, all of them, or more, and whether or not we can pay for the sewage. And with a week and a half. I think that's a fair bargain.
Okay.
So from my perspective, you can talk to your supervisor about what you want, but you can tell them that you're going to get 100% of what you asked for on the 21st if people aren't out, you haven't inspected, and there's no reasonable hope that we're going to get the sewage taken care of. Okay? Any questions, Mr. Padgett?
Yeah, just one. If they don't vacate and I have to do a sheriff's lockout, that's not in my control. Working with Mr. Cass, trying to find a remedy for this sewer is something I can do. If they don't get out and I have to lock them out, I
started off this hearing by explaining you the logistical process. What I've done is slow it down by a week and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to have the sheriff go out and evict, I've just bought you another week and a half to get that done. If you really stop and think about what just happened here. Rather than it being quite as tight as it was, now I've given you an additional week and a half to get that done. My order won't go into effect for 14 days beyond the 21st.
Mm-hmm.
He won't get anything done for about 14 days or roughly 2 weeks after that. So you could, if the whole goal here is to save the relocation costs, you still have that in your control as much as you did before, and actually you have more control over that. What I want is to know whether or not those people are really going to be out on the 17th, whether or not there is an inspection, and whether or not we can get the sewage fixed. At least it minimizes my uncertainty. Still uncertainty, but minimizes. So I think I'm being very fair to you, but putting a fair burden on you as well. And I think what I've done from Mr. Cass' perspective is cost him a week and a half.
Well, I certainly wasn't trying to say that you weren't being fair.
Okay. All right. We will not be seeing you again, but I certainly look forward to receiving something. And my hope is that something is got in there. Here's the violations, and we're going to be able to pay for the sewage issue.
I think on both our behalfs, I just want to ask what an acceptable form of submittal is.
Letter is fine. A memo, letter, whatever you want to do.
Can that be faxed?
No, delivered.
It has to be delivered.
Well, no, you can fax it, but you're in the same dang building.
No, I can do that.
I don't expect anything from him.
Okay. If he wants to.
Then I would prefer, he can fax and or mail. You can't just email.
Okay.
And you can't call us up and say what's going to be done because we won't accept those.
Yeah.
But if it comes in writing, you can do whatever you want in writing. I will respect that. Okay?
All right.
Thank you for coming.